Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. You know, one of the things my co-host Charles and I hear when we open the phone lines to listeners is a request to learn about Alaska history and about the good work Alaskans do. Today's show hits that request out of the park, because today we're talking Hall of Famers, as in the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame. If you don't know about this particular Hall of Fame yet, be prepared to be amazed by the good work and the vital lives its members share. We'll find out about the history of the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame, and we'll meet four new members, inductees, I think they call them, from the class of 2016 during today's show. The formal induction happens at the Anchorage Museum on Thursday, March 3rd, with doors opening at 6:30 and everything happening beginning at 7. Here with me in the studio to set the stage for the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame is Jane Anvik, a leader in the state who has served in many capacities, including on our own Anchorage Assembly, and certainly a mover and a shaker in the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame. So welcome, Jane.
Thank you so much, Kathleen. I'm delighted to be here. And I'm delighted about this topic. I was part of a group of women who had the opportunity to come together in 2008 when the state was considering how to celebrate the 50th year of statehood. And the women that I was meeting with said, well, you know, I noticed that most of the things that people talk about in the founding of the state of Alaska has to do with men. Let's figure out a way that we can tell women's stories. And so the notion of the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame came from looking at something called the U.S. Women's Hall of Fame. The United States of America has a Women's Hall of Fame, which is a virtual Hall of Fame whereby you can go on the internet and find stories in the Women's Hall of Fame about famous people who had served in the United States. And in Alaska, the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame celebrates the accomplishments of women from every community in the state in all kinds of professions and as community involvement. So we started in 2008, and today,
10 years later,
we're going to have our induction ceremony on Thursday night. It's free. It's open to the public. Hey, y'all, come and hear fabulous stories about 13 women who've made a difference in their communities and their professions.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the kind of stories that you don't hear very often because they're not necessarily the most famous people in Alaska. They are just the most hardworking, astonishing influences. Mm-hmm. So Thursday night, that's tomorrow.
Don't miss it.
Tomorrow night at 6:30 at the Anchorage Museum. Come and hear the stories of 13 women who've made a difference in Alaska, from Savunga to Atka to Fairbanks to Anchorage to the Kenai Peninsula and lots of places in between.
Come feel like an Alaskan and celebrate Alaska women. That's a great thing. We also today people can chat with us about this, and we invite them to give us a call at 550-8433 in Anchorage or 1-888-353-5752 statewide, or we can take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And we're going to have some of these Hall of Famers on the radio today, and so you can call and ask them a question, or you just might want to listen to them and not interrupt them, because as we were chatting before the show, the stories are rich, and they're very Alaskan, and it's a great opportunity to hear something about your state and something about people who get things done. That's what impresses me a lot when I read the bios. So I also want to let our listeners know that if you go to alaskapublic.org on the hometown link, you will find a link to the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame. Jane, I'm going to add the National Women's Hall of Fame because we're rubbing shoulders with those guys. And also there's the first project that this group took on was the digitizing of it was called
Profiles in Courage. It's a story of Alaska women.
Profiles of Change. Profiles in Change from 1983, which has something like 70 stories of that were already being collected at that time.
Which was generated by an organization called the Alaska Women's Commission. Mm-hmm. That's when the state of Alaska actually had a commission on what is the condition and well-being of Alaska women. And Katie Hurley, one of the wonderful women of Alaska, was the executive director. And under her direction, they created this book, which is the story of women across Alaska who had made a difference.
Yeah. So it's very rich. If you're ever feeling like you need to be bolstered or to be brave or to go ahead and do the thing you're worried about, go ahead and dial into the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame and get a dose of courage, right?
And they are aviators, they are physicians, they are health aides, they are politicians, they are lawyers and doctors and Indian chiefs and astonishing people from one end of the state to
another.
Right,
right. So your Alaska history is not complete unless you check out this website and find out what some of the women have done. So as I said, we're going to have four of these Class of 2016 inductees chat with us during this hour, and we actually have our first one here in the studio with us right now. I'd love to welcome Nancy Sidman. Welcome, Nancy.
Thank you very much.
Really happy to have you here. She was regaling us with stories before the show began. You have a rich history. You're a medical doctor, I think 55 years as a medical doctor?
Well, see, from 55 until
81.
Well, until I was 81, so that would be.
But the main thing, Nancy, is that you grew up on a farm, and it sounds like many of your values came from that farm. You talked earlier about being connected with people and how that began with actually your chores on the farm, taking care of horses, telling horses what to do. You just sort of naturally are situated in the world. So tell us a little bit about growing up on that farm.
I think that it made me see people as being a part of this earth and not owning this earth. That you know, if you wanted to eat, you had to take care of the dirt on your farm. You had to take care of the water runoff. You had to take care of weeds. I grew up picking mustard out of oats.
What was your favorite thing about being on the farm as a kid?
How did I feel about it?
What was your favorite thing about being a kid on the farm?
Well, the variety of different things you could do. You know, everything from riding horses to, you know, my job was to take care of the chickens. and we were on a creek so that I got to fish. And then I would save, I couldn't stand to kill the fish right away, so I had a can with water in it, and I'd put the fish in there while I caught more fish, and the cats from the barn would come out and get all the fish before I could get them out of the thing. So I fed the cats, too.
Now, I want to ask you about, you know, you became a doctor at a time when there were not many women doctors. Where did the idea for becoming a doctor come from for you?
Well, my older sister, always said she was going to be a missionary doctor in India. And she had, after she got to be older than five, she probably never said that again, but she said a lot before that. So I don't know whether that instilled an idea in me or not. And then I had one high school advisor, a gentleman, who asked me if I'd ever thought of being a doctor. And I was astounded, and I said, no, I never thought of that. Mm-hmm. But look what happened. I guess I began to think of that.
was it a known thing in your family that you would go to college? Did your family just expect you to go to college?
Yes. All of us were supposed to go to college, and my two sisters got married before they finished, but I was the only one who finished college.
And what year did you go, Nancy?
Well, let's see. I graduated in 1946, so I must have gone to 47.
Uh-huh. And you were at the University of Washington, I think you said.
Right? University of Washington, Seattle, yes.
Yeah. Was it rare for women at that time, or did you find a cohort right away at the University of Washington?
You mean
friends? Lots of women.
Yes. I was a tri-delt then. My older sister Jane was a tri-delt. So I was a tri-delt.
Sorority.
Yes.
How many women were in medical school when you were in medical school in your class?
Oh, goodness. I think there must have been about 30. 30 in each class. I would think that's about right.
And where did
how
you
many
go?
Of those were women?
Oh, they were all women.
Oh, there was all women.
And women's med, yes.
I see.
Yes.
And why was there a women's med?
Because the good old Quakers, 100 years before I got into women's med, thought that women should be doctors. And so they started this Women's Medical College of Philadelphia, of Pennsylvania, WMP. Anyway.
One of those P's.
Yes. And it was still in existence and continued to be until it was no longer legal to keep men out of school, or when you couldn't have a single sex school.
Yeah. Now, when we were talking before the show, you talked a little bit about first being in college and it not going so well, and you were on the wrong side of the dean's list there for a while. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I found it very difficult because I entered college thinking that I wanted to be a writer, and as soon as I got to college and I found out they had a writers group that met after school, and I thought, oh, I'll go there and meet all these writers. So I went to this meeting. Every single person there was drunk as a skunk, and I thought, oh, if I have to be drunk to be a writer, I can't be one. Mm-hmm. So then I was lost, and I didn't know what I wanted to do for some time.
Yeah. Now, before that, you wanted to be Amelia Earhart for a while.
Oh, yes. Amelia Earhart was my hero. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Ever since I first heard of her, I wanted to be like her, be able to do things, be successful.
It wasn't so much about being a pilot, but being your whole self.
Well, it's both. I always wanted to be a pilot, and I started making model airplanes and flying them and doing all that, practicing, reading up on all the different, techniques for doing turns.
And, and you got your pilot's license. And
oh,
you
yes.
are a pilot.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes.
And you flew in the Aleutians, right? Did you fly in the Aleutians?
Well, I would fly not in the Aleutians. No, I would never fly out there because I was smart enough to know that unless you know the weather and what to do and how it can change, don't do it. So I never flew in the Aleutians, and I never was even tempted to do so after I'd been there a while.
That's wise. That's very wise. How did you get to the Aleutians, though? You practiced medicine in the Aleutians.
Well, I had a family practice in
Anchorage.
Yeah, in Anchorage for years and years. And then it was getting to be so that you had to follow all of these rules about, you couldn't keep your patient in the hospital because somebody in New York City said that was long enough for them to be in the hospital. Somebody who had never been to medical school and tell me what tests I could run drove me nuts. And so I was willing to quit about then. And then I had the opportunity to work in Dutch Harbor itinerant. We had to supervise two physician's assistants who were working in the clinic in Dutch Harbor, and they needed a doctor, and that was done on a rotation thing. So you rotate, go there for 2 weeks, and then come home, and somebody else would go.
Was that the Iliuluk Clinic?
That's right.
Yeah. But then you kind of threw in full time, right?
And
you
after I'd been there, I worked for a long time. And then they found out how much OB experience I had, and it cost $1,000 to go to Anchorage, round trip, and you can't make that many trips just to have your OB check, and so I spent 2 years setting up an OB protocol that was similar to what I'd used here in Anchorage. So they'd have all the right tests, and they even made the forms look like the forms here, so when they got here, the nurse would know right where to look, see what was there, and they'd have all the right tests at the right time and the measurements at the right time. And
So is for people who are going to have babies?
Yes, yes, all the pregnant women, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then my nurse took over. Once that was done, then they said, that's fine, you've taught us, thank you very much. And they had a farewell party for me. And
you set it all up and then they said goodbye.
Yeah, well, no, I didn't need to say, because I fixed it up.
It was set, okay.
But then APIA, Aleutian Pribilof Island Association, said, do you think you might like to go to the Aleutians? And I said, I think so.
What about the Aleutians do you love so much?
Oh, I think... the changing weather and the beauty, the absolute beauty of almost every day when you can see, and the people, the Aleuts that I met had the same view about people and this earth that I did as a farmer because they're doing the same thing.
Mm.
And mm-hmm. they're careful of this, and you don't do that, all mm-hmm. that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right, right. So the other things, I wanted to you to leave with young women and with women in general, something about what keeps you going. And I read your bio, and I read that you had a maternal grandfather that had a kind of a mantra that you heard as a girl, and you kind of hung on to that. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it was just that he said, if you want to do something and you don't know how to do it, you know, don't stop. Just figure out how. And once you figure out how, then you can go ahead and do that.
Mm-hmm. And had that proved out in your life?
Seemed to, yes.
The other thing I love reading about you is that you, in your 50s, picked up the cello and became quite an accomplished cello player.
Oh, yes. But my older sister and I used to play violins. The mother insisted that we take music lessons, so we were taking that. But every time I make a mistake, mother would hit me with a fly swatter, and so I decided I didn't really want to play a violin. So my father got a piano so I could sit down, and she couldn't hit me when I make mistakes. Anyway, so that was the start of that. But
you were in the Anchorage Civic Orchestra.
Yes, but that was, the cello that I bought was Anne's, my sister Jane's daughter's cello, who had decided she didn't want to play cello anymore, and it was very nice, and would I like to buy it. And I bought it for my son,
mm-hmm.
and so he used it for a couple of years and decided he liked basketball better, mm-hmm. and it was just sitting there, so I thought, oh, I think maybe I'll try that now. And I've loved it.
And you took to it. You just took to it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
oh, yes.
Yeah. When you were flying, are you still flying now?
No.
Where would you like to go when you were flying?
Duck hunting. Every day in the wintertime.
So where would you go duck hunting?
Well, I'd fly. I live on Sand Lake, and so I'd just fly across the inlet over to Kenai, and I had a Super Cub, and there was a puddle there that was so small that nobody else could land on it successfully. Especially if they had big airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could park on that little puddle, mm-hmm. and then take my dog out and go hunting for the day and then come home. I remember one day it was so rough. My dog then was Tigger, I guess. I forget names like that.
Yeah.
It was rough, and pretty soon there were paws on my shoulder because he was bouncing up and down. And then he was halfway in my lap. We finally made it home.
That's amazing, right?
Yeah.
You know, but we're going to wind up and welcome another guest on. But when there were tough times that you had to get through, how did you get through tough times? That's one of the things you had to do with all the medical work, raising a family, getting through medical school in a time when many women didn't go to medical school. What would you do when times were tough?
Keep trying. Mm-hmm. I think that's the basic answer, mm-hmm. because it would be different. It had to be different each time, but you have to say, okay, that doesn't work now. What might work?
Mm-hmm.
And if I did such and such, do you think it might be? Well, let's see.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just sort of feeling your way along, but always going.
Perseverance. And right now, what is your favorite thing right now? What are you enjoying tremendously in your life right now?
Oh, goodness.
So much.
Lots of memories.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking of moving into a rest home, but that's not my happy moment. But on the same hand, it's the same sort of thing, because if it's time for me to move into a rest home and not live all alone, and my dog doesn't talk to me very much, then I have to figure out ways to make that acceptable, changes I have to make in me, expectations that have to change, all of that sort of
mm-hmm.
thing.
Getting your head around the idea.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I mean, I didn't want to necessarily ask you about that, but just, you know, what do you do every single day now that you just love? Maybe it's walking with your dog.
Oh, yes, sure. That. And picture puzzles. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It keeps you off the bottle.
How about reading? Are you an avid reader?
I used to be, and I don't read very much anymore, and I don't know why that is.
Mm-hmm. I imagine just that you must have been a reader all your life.
Oh, because, yes, I've got bookcases like these. Yeah.
But Nancy did turn out to be a writer and has written the story of her life, which is called Sideways Rain, which is a fabulous book about her life, both growing up, but also it gets us to the Aleutian Chain, mm-hmm. where she practiced medicine for 20 years. And I understand there are many people from the Aleutian Chain who are coming Thursday night just to honor you because you birthed those babies.
I bet there are people listening today that you birthed.
They still send me Christmas cards from out there. It just touches my heart.
Yeah.
And when I was there, they treated me like one of them.
Yeah.
It was just remarkable.
Yeah.
I'm starting to cry.
it's a pleasure to meet you. I'm going to say thank you, but people can come and hear Nancy and see her again tomorrow night at 6:30 at the Anchorage Museum when the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame inducts its class of 2016. And so if people want to hear more, there's another chance.
Absolutely. Yeah. Dr. Nancy Sydenham, a heroine of Alaska.
Yes. So thank you. I'm going to go ahead and welcome our next guest on, Shirley Mae Staton. Hello, Shirley.
Hello, Kathleen. I thought you didn't say my whole name, Shirley Mae Springer Staton.
Well, let's do it again. Hello, Shirley Mae Springer Staton.
You don't have to. Just kidding.
So, Shirley, welcome to Hometown Alaska. We're honoring you today. We're giving a preview to the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame Class of 2016 induction, which is tomorrow at 6:30 at the Anchorage Museum. The doors open at 6:30. It starts at 7. But anyway, what is your story, Shirley Mae? How did you get into the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame? Let's start talking about that.
My story?
Well, I have to confess, I know Shirley very well. We go to the symphony together. We actually go out to breakfast on Saturdays and end up staying in the restaurant all day talking until it's time for us to leave at 4 o'clock.
And then we go to another restaurant.
Yeah. And just continue the conversation. So so I have seen Shirley. I know Shirley as a fabulous singer. I know Shirley as a person filled with inspiration who wants to inspire people to become almost like what Nancy said, to be everything that they are. That is something that is really part of Shirley. Do I have that right, Shirley Mae?
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where did you get that from?
Where did I get that from? That inspiration. Mostly I want to inspire myself. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I can't quite pinpoint a time in my life that said, okay, this is what I want to present. I think it was an evolution of many crossing people's path and being inspired by them and, you know, wanting to embody that myself. I had a teacher. I was going to San Diego Community College, and I had this teacher, Mrs. Hardy was her name. And I think I took a psychology class or a sociology class from her. But every day when I walked in the classroom, she had something so interesting and exciting to tell us. And, you know, I remember just sitting there being inspired by her and passing another woman. I was thinking about this recently. I would have to walk past this house on the way to San Diego Community College, and this woman was gardening, and I stopped and started talking to her, and we became friends, and I would come over for tea or coffee. And she would tell the most amazing stories, and I remember sitting there just being in awe. Mm-hmm. So people who've crossed my path.
Mm-hmm. Have inspired you?
I've known Shirley Mae for many years, and I regard her as a change agent, a person who assists people in coming together to recognize our commonality and to build bridges where there might be difficulties associated with gender or race or other kind of discord. So I think she is a change agent in our midst.
I like that. That's very good. Thank you, Jane. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Now, I have embodied a new title that I like, and it's called a cultural archivist.
Archivist? Is that?
No, 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 no. Okay. It's a cultural archivist.
Archivist, okay. Uh-huh. Go ahead and tell us about that.
It is a person who brings culture and art together to create change.
Are you involved in a project right now to do that?
Which one? I mean, yes, I'm involved in many
which of the
projects
six?
Right now. I am involved. It is a group of individuals. I have a cross-cultural emergent camp this summer for kids to come and learn about our many cultures. I'm working on a lullaby project, which is supporting women at Highland Mountain Prison. And I'm working on a community initiative that will happen in September. It's called the Anchorage Cultural Summit. And it is to support our dialogue, but deep, meaningful dialogue with our many cultures in the city. So, you know, I said, and people say this all the time, oh, we have 97 languages in Anchorage. And last summer, the question appeared for me, so what does that mean? Really, what does it mean that we can talk about we have all of these languages? And as I asked the question, you know, there were more questions, and then I got together with a group of individuals, and we decided that it would be important not just to talk about the fact that we have all these languages. How do we bring the cultures together? And Anchorage is a good community. And we can be better. We can be better by including the 97 languages in our community in a cross-cultural event and making Anchorage even better.
So
not
Shirley,
just
Shirley,
for us, but for our children, too.
What ideas do you have? As you know, we've been a diversity for a very long time, but as you're pointing out, we don't really know what to do with that. What's the next step? What ideas do you have to take us to the next step?
I don't. I don't have the ideas. Well, of course I have some ideas, but that's just my ideas. Mm-hmm. I think the power in bringing people together is that you can hear the voices from a person of color, from a person of not color, from our general population at large, that's what I should say. And the power in that is it's not a single voice. Mm-hmm. There are many voices saying this is what we can do to make Anchorage a more inclusive community. Mm-hmm. And so that would be one reason to have the summit. And the summit is not the end. It is the beginning. It's as we come together and look at our commonalities.
I like that.
Where do we go from here?
I like that. I always think we get farther ahead when we think about how similar we are than to focus on our differences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Now, is music going to play a part? Music is always a part of your life, and I know I've heard you sing many times. I've heard you sing at the women's prison, Highland Mountain. I have heard you sing lullabies. You actually sang a lullaby to my mom on a CD.
Oh, that's right.
So, is music going to be part of your? Is it part of how we sort of embrace all the differences that are here? Is music part of that for you?
In these particular projects, for the culture camp, there will be music. Mary Charlotte will be teaching music. Corinne, who's an African-American actress and singer, a beautiful singer, in the city will be teaching some music at the culture camp. But I, you know, music isn't woven in any of these projects for me that I'm doing. So the only place I'm singing is in my house.
Hey, Shirley, we're going to take a tiny break, but come back and talk with you again. So just hang on. This is Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy. We have been talking about the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame for a whole half hour, and we're going to talk about it again in the next half hour. They have a big event coming up tomorrow night at 6:30 at Anchorage Museum when they induct their class of 2016, 13 women that are being noticed for their contributions to the state. And this is a great way to get a slice of Alaska history that you might not have gotten before.
Absolutely.
This is Jane Anvik. Welcome, Jane, back.
We have 13 women who are going to be inducted tomorrow, and they come from the end of the Aleutian chain to the interior to Savunga in northwest Alaska, as well as wonderful people from south central and southeastern. So we are blessed.
And we talked with Nancy Sydenham in the first part of our show, and if you want to know more about Nancy, check out her book at the Anchorage Public Library. That's where I found it yesterday, Sideways Rain, filled with color and vitality and really her viewpoint on the world, which is a very upbeat and do what you can, do what you want attitude. So Sideways Rain, Nancy Sydenham. But we also have Shirley Mae Staten, Springer Staten, on the phone with us for a few more minutes. Shirley, I like to share wisdom, and I think of you as a very wise person. And you know, when people don't get what they think they want, or they struggle with something, I mean, do you have anything to share? What do you share with women or anybody who's struggling? How do you get back up again and try again? I know Nancy said you just get back up and you do it again. You figure out how. Well, what do you do in difficult times?
I was listening to her, and I definitely agree. I grew up in Georgia and with my grandmother, and during the time that the work for African Americans was picking cotton. And I often say that who I am today is because of that, because there wasn't a day that we did not go to the fields and say, it's impossible, we can't do this, it's too hot, et cetera, et cetera. No, you just did it. You mm-hmm. just did it. And I know what I learned from that experience and that time period in my life is that it is extremely challenging, and you keep going. you just keep going. I'm working on this lullaby project, and we are trying to raise funds for it. And last week I was like, oh, my God, I don't think I can do this. And on Friday it's like, okay, yeah, I can. So you knock on another door, and you knock on another door, and you call. And giving up is never an option. And that's the thing I think young people need to know today, that giving up is never an option. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just keep trying. And sometimes you want it to be purple, whatever it is you're working on, and it turns out blue. And that's the perfect shade of blue that you needed for you know, making this project.
So you adapt.
Fruition.
You adapt if you have to?
You adapt if you have
to. Yeah. Shirley, I want to read this description I read in a local newspaper story about you. And it says, she's one of those people who seem to look exactly the same when you're grown up as when you were in third grade. she's
part... That was somebody I was probably telling a story to in third grade.
So, you were definitely talking to third graders. She's part no-nonsense mother figure, part inspirational speaker with close-cropped hair, a penchant for dangling jewel-tone earrings, and a vibrato singing voice I can still hear in my head.
Oh, wow. That gives me chill bumps.
Yeah, well.
I wonder who that person is. I want to meet that person.
Well, that was a story called In Fairview, Miss Shirley Opens Children's Eyes. It was written by Julia O'Malley and appeared in the Anchorage Daily News in 2011. So you're still doing that. You're still opening people's eyes.
Yes, so, and mine too.
Yes. And I have to say, Shirley, I know that you have a birthday coming up because I'm going to be celebrating it with you in Tuscany. We're going to go have a wild time in Tuscany. So, again, Shirley May, if people want to hear more from you, and I bet they do, they can come tomorrow to the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame inductee ceremony at the Anchorage Museum at 6:30.
Free and open to the public.
Yeah.
Y'all come.
Yeah. So, Shirley, I'll be there rooting for you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling in and sharing some of your story and some of your wisdom and some of your get back up and keep doing it spirit. So thanks, Shirley.
All right, then.
Take
Enjoy.
Care. All right. Bye-bye. So I would like to welcome, how are you doing, Jane? You hanging in
Terrific.
There?
Terrific.
Okay, take a sip of water. We're not done yet.
Joyfully.
We'd like to welcome Janet McCabe to Hometown Alaska. Hello, Janet.
Hello.
Welcome. And I just have to say, Janet, I am so impressed with all the things that you did, and I want to share them on the radio with people. You began as a city planner, but you didn't stop there. You had a whole career as a city planner, and then you retired and went on to do so much related to therapeutic courts, therapeutic justice, history, preserving history. I know our listeners at Hometown Alaska care a lot about history, so I want to share your story. Let's just start with... I don't know. I've asked everybody here for something from their childhood. I'm always trying to figure out what makes you tick. Was there something from your childhood that launched you on this amazing path where you could not take no for an answer no matter what?
Well, you know, listening to Shirley, it just dawned on me how I could answer that, how I should answer. It's true. My father died, and my mother was a widow, and she had a really tough job writing papers on botany. And I went in to talk to her once in a while about it. And she said, you know, the key thing is just write it, just do it. And, you know, get something batted out and then maybe think about it. I love to rewrite when I write.
That's the editor in you, right?
Right. And, but the just do it is an important message for me.
You know, when I think back to, I read your bio, and everybody can read your bio on the Alaska Women Hall of Fame website, and we have that link on alaskapublic.org. But there was something about you and your father. He was involved, he was a chemist, and he worked crime scenes, and there was something about his attitude about justice that seems like it stuck with you. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, right. That's true. He set up the first crime lab in Massachusetts, mm-hmm. and was really a pioneer in that area. And he used to go around to the Massachusetts courthouses and give evidence. He really wanted the truth to come through. And he took me along often. And I think his belief in justice and truth and the association of the two concepts has always been an inspiration to me.
Yeah, it's science in the service of justice. You must have been a little girl at that time. Were you a teenager, or were you young, or what?
Well, I was maybe 10 or 11 mm-hmm. or 12. Mm-hmm.
Really formative. I'm surprised you didn't become a lawyer, actually, after that. But
I became a city planner, and that was partly just by good chance and good luck. And I think I also wanted to say, you know, so often people's future has to do with seeing an opportunity and taking it, with the luck that people have. And I've had a lot of good luck.
Mm.
But
tell us about... go ahead. You go ahead, Janet.
Oh, okay. Well, when I was in college, I guess the other thing that has sort of gotten me interested in justice was that in the 1950s was not a really particularly just time for women, and it was very
That's
hard.
An understatement.
Right. To find anything to do but be a teacher or a secretary. They're both honorable professions, but it wasn't quite me. And fortunately, I just happened to notice the head of the planning office in Boston wanted women interns, in the good sense of the word. And so I applied, and he was up to, he wanted to give people, women, a chance. And I got a job with him, and that was just the start of my career. It was, you know, so exciting to be doing something that really mattered to people. That then I went back to school and took courses in the subject. And
why planning, Janet? Why planning?
Well, it was, I like the idea of looking forward and taking the overview and trying to work specifically towards goals.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, planning is, you know, a variety of things. It's social and land use and everything else.
Yeah.
The whole basic concept is that you take the big picture and you try to sort through and find the right way to make progress in some goal.
I like that we could actually sit down and find the right way to make progress. I love that idea.
Pretty.
Janet, I'm just going to throw our phone numbers out to our listeners just in case anyone has a question. 550-8433 in Anchorage, 188-353-5752 around the state, or you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. I was just looking at your bio, and one of the things you're noted for, because you came to Alaska and you worked as a staff planner for the Federal State Land Use Planning Commission, lots of Alaska Native Interest Lands Conservation Act. That your emphasis throughout your planning career was to bring diverse voices into the discussion of public policy issues. Can you talk a little bit about that? Why that was important?
Well, yes, I think, what I've always tried to do is, somebody once told me, go out and hire somebody smarter than you. And I wasn't terribly happy about that at the moment, but it's totally true. If you can find other people that are also not so much smart, but have a different, smarter, of course, but have a different angle and work together. I like the Margaret Murray quote that it just takes a small group of dedicated people. But if you can find people that really share the goal, they can be people that are very different from you, but you get a commonality by working towards something that you all feel is very important.
And that becomes the thing that gets you all on the same page, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
But you retired from the National Park Service in 2000, but you did not stop. Not at all. Can you tell us a little bit? We talked a little bit about your dad and his taking you around and sort of teaching you about, you know, getting the right information so justice could actually happen. But then in 2000, you became really active in therapeutic justice. And, I mean, was this something you were just waiting to get to? You had to get through your planning career before you could, you know, was it a lifelong goal?
No, not at all. Well, I ran into Judge Wanamaker, who was, I was on the Downtown Business Association. I'd worked with Rick Maestrom when that was set up. And one of the problems that was confronting them was a lot of people that were just sitting drinking on the front of City Hall. And it didn't seem right to be moving them out of public view. And I was talking about that with Judge Wanamaker because we at the time were working on something having to do with historic preservation. And he said, let's do something about that. So he set up the therapeutic court, which was focused on solving problems that underlay criminal behavior, like addiction primarily. And We worked with the municipality also. They were and started the first therapeutic court. So that was how it came about, or really my latter-day inspiration, I guess, towards justice. And so, it seemed like, yeah.
This is Jane. Can you tell us a little bit about how that works? What happens to somebody who is up before a judge and they've got an addiction problem? How does a therapeutic court actually work?
Oh, okay. Well, I was hoping for that kind of question. And the I think the best answer was given to us by one of the guys that was in the therapeutic court. And he said he'd been in before, he'd had a number of crimes. And he said previously it was the prosecutor and the defender and the judge against me. And now it's the prosecutor, the judge, the treatment provider, and the defender all working with me to against my addiction. Mm-hmm. So what it really does is people get into the court, and then they choose to go into an 18-month program, and they need to get a job, stay sober, and do a lot of things that will help put them on the track towards long-term sobriety and being a constructive, positive, law-abiding member of the community. And if they graduate, they don't have to go to jail and they don't have a fine. And if it's a drug court, the case is dismissed, which is even better.
That's pretty impressive, yeah.
Yes.
I read in your bio, Janet, that in 2013 you've been working again on Partners Reentry Center, which is combining employment assistance to sort of help cut down on recidivism. You talk a little bit about that?
Sure, yes. Well, actually, Partners for Progress has two programs now. We have the support of the therapeutic court, and then the reentry center is was started because we thought the big end of the stick is really when people get out of prison. And there you have masses of individuals that need some kind of assistance and are just often homeless, and often they find a very hostile community because they have a felony record. So to try to make a difference there, there were other people wanting to work on it too. So what we do is we offer, we try to get people the first night that they get out of prison, and now we've got a good relationship with the Department of Corrections, and they refer people to us that are just so they know where to go. And we offer temporary housing. We use housing providers in the communities throughout the community, and then employment training, and the center has lined up over 600 local employers who have been willing to hire.
That's awesome.
Yes, it really is. So it's a pretty good, it's pretty realistic that somebody can find a job the first month.
Janet, we're going to have to say goodbye and say thank you so much for, it's amazing. We could have gone on for a whole hour about this for sure, but I want to say thank you to you for all the work you've done in the community, and to tell folks, come tomorrow and hear more about Janet McCabe and what she did after she retired.
And one other thing, and that is that therapeutic courts are now all over the state of Alaska as a result of Janet's efforts with other people who had been working around the state. So it's gone everywhere, and it makes a big difference in recidivism.
So, Janet, thank you so, so much for taking a little bit of, I'm not sure how you squeezed us in your schedule because you're a busy woman, but thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Alaska Public Television and Alaska Public Media in general. We ought to support them.
Hey.
Thank you. All right. And now we want to welcome Joe Mikulski on. Hello, Joe.
Hi, I'm here.
Thank you. How are you?
I am good. I'm good. I'm great.
Thank you so much for joining us. You are our fourth inductee, and we've been trying to talk with each one of them a little bit. I loved reading your bio and loved
sort of finding out, how you sort of came to Alaska, got involved in education, but had a little tug toward business there, and my, did you have business talents.
Well, and unbeknownst to me, definitely unbeknownst to me.
It doesn't sound like you had too many failures there.
No. My sister and I have had a whole series of businesses, and they've all been successful. And I think that luck has played a part in that. And
I think
it was also something that, it turned out, we were good at.
Yeah, we had other folks talk about luck, but I actually think you make your own luck, actually.
I agree. I agree.
Joe, this is Jane. What are the most important pieces of having success in business?
Well, let me see. That's a very, very good question. I think that when I only had retail. Well, I had one wholesale business, but retail businesses and businesses are general. So I think it's difficult necessarily to generalize across the board. But for retail businesses, I believe that if you treat people fairly, and that would be the customer and your employees, and if you for the employees at least if you pay them well, we've always had mostly women employees and paid well above minimum wage. I think that's very important. Then employees will also treat customers well. If you carry quality products and sell them at a fair price, I mean, it's just basic common sense, I think, that will make a business successful and a good business.
Yeah. You know, something in your bio that I loved, I have always loved the League of Women Voters, because when I go vote, there they are. Yeah. And you early on in the 70s got involved, and that was one of the ways you became sort of community active. Was that one of the few ways that you saw back then to get involved that way?
Well, we lived in the early 70s, we lived in Fairbanks. And yeah, Fairbanks, the League of Women Voters, I think, has been a training ground. Jane will agree with this, definitely.
Absolutely.
Training ground for a lot of women who eventually then went on into politics or did community service like I did, did volunteer work. The League has been well known as a training ground for women who wanted to become active in, in their community. So I got involved in the League. I knew some women who were involved in Fairbanks and wanted to know more about the community and also participate in helping others to know more about the community. So that's where I initially got involved, then continued involvement when I came to Anchorage.
One of the things you're known for is being an excellent fundraiser, and that's a hard thing. Some people are afraid of that. But you don't seem to shy away from it. You're very comfortable with it. I've read, I don't mind asking people for donations, and I don't mind when others ask me for a donation. I'm old enough that I can say yes and determine at what level I'm willing to give, or I can say no, but good luck with your fundraising. So you have just a very sort of grounded approach to that. Do you think that's unique among people tasked with trying to fundraise?
I don't think it's unique among people who don't mind fundraising or enjoy fundraising. It's not unique, but it might be somewhat unique among people who should be doing fundraising. I've been on any number of boards where that is the most difficult thing that's asked of a board member, because so many of them, board members are willing to help run the organization, but, to go ask for money, it's a real difficult thing. And I've always been, I'm just a pretty straightforward, get kind of person.
Yeah.
And I've always figured, like myself, that if I ask people, I ask people for money for things I believe in. And if they choose not to, my assumption is that it's because they have other things that they prefer to support. And I know that, I'll make I'll make a case for the nonprofit or the program or the organization that I believe in, and then, like I said in the earlier quote you read, if they choose to do something else, that's their choice.
You just
that's
don't take it personally, right?
No, I never take it personally.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
I'm surprised you've never been in office, but it sounds like you've been encouraged, but it was always the wrong time.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I've had, now I'm retired, I actually would consider running for office, but I would have to move from where I am, because the party that I would support is really already, is here in my area of Anchorage. So this is not where I would be running for office in this particular area of the community. But, yeah, that's something that early on I thought I might want to do. I thought I might want to become involved in politics. And then I got so busy with businesses that it really wasn't an option.
Yeah.
So, Joe has also been very busy in the community as well. And one of the things that she did has been she served as the chairperson of the University of Alaska Foundation. And Joe, tell us about what they do and what you got to do when you were at it.
Yeah. The University of Alaska Foundation basically takes care of both collecting and investing the private monies that come to the university. And so at this point, it's over a $300 million corpus in the fund of the foundation. And that would include money coming in for scholarships and for a whole variety of things for the University of Alaska system-wide. And I just stepped off of that board in December after 10 years. I timed off. And it's wonderful. It promotes philanthropy throughout the state, promotes philanthropy towards the University of Alaska specifically. It was a very good experience. I was also have been involved and continue to be involved with the Alaska Community Foundation, which is another statewide organization promoting philanthropy, but in a more general sense and not specifically to, you know, to one organization, but trying to promote philanthropy that appeals to the particular giver.
So, Joe, some people think that you have to be really rich to be a philanthropist. Is
No.
philanthropy something that anybody can do?
It's something anybody can do. Yeah, philanthropy is giving of your time and giving of your talents, and it's something that we all have. And by talents, I would include dollars. And you do not have to be fabulously wealthy to be a philanthropist. No, of course not. Of course not. It's important for everybody to participate and everybody to contribute.
Yeah. I wish we could clone you, Joe. How about just a little word of encouragement for young women? If there was a message you had for young women, what would it be?
I think my message for young women, and I don't know, I mean, it's always needed, but it's less needed now than when I was young, is that, you know, you can do anything you want. And I think that back when I graduated from high school in 65, went on to college, I was lucky I had parents that believed that I could do anything I wanted to do. But I know that wasn't true across the board. And back then, you know, there were certain careers that women were expected to follow if they were going to have a career. And, you know, that's not true these days. It's whatever you want to do, you can do. Whatever you want to achieve, you can do it.
Well, and we've got to go out on those very, very winning words. Whatever you want to do, do it. Just do it. I'd really like to thank our guests today on Hometown Alaska. We've had Nancy Sydenham, Janet McCabe, Shirley Mae Staton, Joe Mahalski, and Jane Anvik here in the studio with me. All new members to the Hall of Fame, the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame. So their event is tomorrow night at the Anchorage Museum starting at 6:30. Next week, Charles is back as your host talking about spring fire danger. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. David Waldron is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.